All right, continue our study on personal evangelism. We want to look at our book, page 15, I believe is where we left off last time. We'll also pause for a minute. We've given people the opportunity to share some information about their conversion, how they became a Christian. Is there anybody else that wants to, kind of tell us what happened with them? Cindy? We think about Deuteronomy 6 as far as what God said with kids. When they rise up as you're going along the way at night and you continue to teach those opportunities, use those opportunities to teach your kids. And that also works with people who are adults. As you interact with them, whether it's in the neighborhood, whether it's in the workplace, whether it may be in a school setting, or in the case that you described, all those things have been used to help people become Christians over the years. So that's another neat story. All right, very good. So we appreciate that. We'll ask again next time, but this evening we want to turn our attention to page 15. I believe we stopped with point 2 last time. What did Randall persistently do in his interactions with Mike? I believe that was at least where I marked the ending point. He asked spiritual questions. He asked questions instead of preached. There's a place for preaching. There's a time for preaching. But oftentimes, as you're dealing with people, a sermon is not what they want to hear. Ask questions. People oftentimes love to talk. Sometimes people here love to hear themselves talk, it seems like. And if you can get them headed in a direction, ask some questions, and maybe that's going to cause them to do some personal reflecting and think, never thought about that before. And that's what we have here as we think about Mike and Randall. Picking up then with new material, this is point 4, page 15, as a Christian. How do people see you? What is their spiritual perception of you? Anybody want to take a shot at that? How do people see you as a Christian? Hopefully they do see you.
Especially with what's going on at my workplace there, I've talked to several of them lately more about I'm leaving there because I want to be here, and I can't do that. And it's amazing to me that how many have responded to that, that they want to be at services on a Sunday, but they can't be either. I'm hoping that what I've done will influence some of the others to realize that there's something far more important than just working that's keeping you away from serving God.
Okay, so you're somebody that wants to make sure that that priority is visible to others to the point of being willing to let go a job. That's good. I mean, there's one example of letting your light shine. What else? Oh, okay. I'm going to come back to you. Stan was right in the process of putting something out, so we're going to take his thought and then come back to you, Tracy.
I used to work in the office area because I worked in engineering, but I spent a lot of time out on the floor. Some of those ladies I got to know pretty well. Some of them I didn't get to know so well, but I didn't really speak to any of them too much as far as Bible was concerned, but just by interacting with them, you could tell which of them at least were good moral people. And one day I walked out on the floor, it was early in the morning, and one of the ladies stopped me and said, she said, "Would you please pray for my son?" So I guess you don't necessarily have to even talk to them, but your life gives you away.
Okay, let's just tag that comment with the word approachable, and I'll come back to that in just a minute. But Tracy, we'll go ahead and take your thought.
No, I was just saying that people think you can't do anything wrong if you're a Christian, and if you do something wrong, they're quick to say, "Oh, I thought you were a Christian."
Right, and that can be their perception of you. You're a goody-two-shoes who never does anything wrong or never have a bad thought, never say a bad word, all those kinds of things. And that's unfortunate that people sometimes have that perception and attach that connotation to Christianity. That's not right, But that is a problem. Going back to what we tagged Stan's comment with, approachable. Ideally, that's something that everybody who's a Christian will have when it comes to their personality. Now, some people are just more approachable than others. You might find that somebody's in a hurry. Teresa says sometimes to me, you know, you look like you're in a hurry. You know, people may not feel like you're always approachable. Well, you know, if I'm going in six different directions, you know, let me know. We may have to, you know, I may have to call you or come over and visit her, but, you know, we'll go ahead and get that done, whatever needs to be done. But I had a fella call today, a preacher in the area. And he said, look, there's this couple that needs marriage counseling. That's not really my thing. Would you do marriage counseling for them? Well, that city is within 2 hours from here. My plate's already kind of full, but I said, well, tell you what. I said, I've actually got to be down in that area within the next couple weeks. And here's how that day is structured. So this isn't the only offer I have, but maybe we, if that day works because of how things are supposed to go, and maybe over the noon hour, they can, with a couple weeks notice, they can maybe extend the lunch hour, maybe, you know, take half a day off, whatever, and maybe we can get together from this period to this period, and at least we can kind of get things started in that way. Now, I'm no marriage counselor. I don't have that shingle. But if somebody wants to talk to, you know, me about that, always try to be approachable. And I thought, and I'm not trying to brag, I'm just saying he felt like he could call me and he felt like he could ask that question. And ideally, that's what Stan was talking about here. We will be approachable. We may not have all the answers. We may need to point people elsewhere, but at least we are approachable. And that's what you have, I think, in the book. Randall is well-dressed, but at the same time, he's someone who is approachable. And if people have a Bible question, just like Ray, you know, well, you know, help us out a little bit here. What are your thoughts? Or there's some major event, you know, you or the Walking Bible here at the shop. What do you think about that? So those are important things. Anybody else? Betty?
When I was working, it kind of brings to mind what is their perception of us. There were quite a few that worked there where I worked that were, quote, you know, Christians and different religious groups. And the one thing that I noticed about those people were that they, you know, when they would talk about they would do this at their church and they would do that at their church and they would do this at their church, but they never were never shy about, oh, let's go to the bar. Let's go do this. Let's go do that. And I even got up the nerve one time to ask one of them, I thought you were a Christian. Doesn't your church group teach, or doesn't your religious belief, I think that's when I said church group, teach that that is wrong? Oh, no. We can do it socially as long as we don't get drunk. But I said, but you just got done saying you were drunk out of your mind last night. Oh, well, that's okay occasionally. I mean, it's just like, okay, I'm religious, but yet I can do all
of
this.
And I think for a lot of people, that is their perception that you've taken religion too far. I have it too. I have my church. I have my faith. I read the Bible. I do all these things, but I'm not the fanatic that you are. I don't go to those extremes, quote unquote. So there is that perception, and that's very, very common with a lot of people. But for us, it does look odd. Anybody else? Final thought. All right, let's go back. Everybody have a copy of the book? Let me make sure that we don't have anybody who's lacking material. Okay. Back to page 15, let's now take a look at point number 5. What question did Randall ask Mike to open this day's spiritual dialogue?
How many times did you eat
today? Yeah, how many times did you eat today? Now, I don't know about you, I don't think that question would work for me. I put an illustration here that would be useful for another point in the book, but I'm going to give it to you now. There was this fine lady, she actually came some years back, she's died now. Died a couple years ago, but she was in her 80s, came and helped on one of her door-knocking campaigns. And one of the things, when we lived in Fort Wayne, that was where we met her, spent some time with her there. One of the things that she told us early on in life was, at least our lives, she was probably at least in the mid-60s, maybe she'd hit 70 by that point. She says, I used to sell World Book, used to go door-to-door. And maybe you, in the past, depending on your age, bought World Book. Remember how you had the nice volume set and you had the nice little wood rack and all those things. People would go door to door and be a World Book salesman. She said, I did well. I don't discount that fact. I mean, she probably was one of the top sellers, if not in the nation, at least probably in the region. And one of the things, I can't remember the context of the conversation, but one of the things that she said was, when I go up to a door, I always look for something to compliment the homeowner on. She said, for example, I will look at the flowers and say, you have such nice flowers, your landscaping is nice, or that's such a pretty sign, and those kinds of things. Anything wrong with that? No. And if you're a salesperson, that can kind of help break the ice. I don't know that I'm going to necessarily try to follow that procedure exactly. You know, look for something to compliment when you're trying to deal with somebody as far as a Bible study. But you do sometimes need some way to break into a spiritual dialogue. What did Jesus use in John chapter 4? Remember? He's thirsty. There's the water. Is water on the mind of the woman? Sure, I mean, she's thinking about that. So that's kind of a natural bridge there. And Jesus was able to use that. Nicodemus comes by night. He has a spiritual question. Jesus is able to use that in John chapter 3. So, you know, sometimes it seems like the right circumstances come up. Sometimes you sort of put the foot out there and hope it doesn't get shot off. That can happen too. But a lot of times you get an opening. And there just needs to be the courage there to step through that door. But the openings that we find in the book may or may not work with us or for us, and here is one that I probably wouldn't use. How many times did you eat today? To me, that just seems a little cheesy. But it does illustrate the fact that you do need something to kind of get the motor going, so to speak. Any thoughts on that?
And this took place in the 80s, right? This conversion story?
That sounds about right to me. Okay, 87. So thank you very much. So
the cheesy language seems so cheesy now, but then it was cool.
And it could be. It seems like every year or two you have new phrases and slang changes, and with all the alterations, you know, you're going back almost 30 years. Yeah.
It's just about talking to people in the language that they're used to. If you just speak all lofty, grandiose words that go right above people's heads and talk about concepts that they have, you know, you got to start where they're at before you can build up.
Approachability. Again, it goes back to that. I can communicate with this guy, and it's easy enough to open that door. Good. Anybody else? Okay, let's go back and see what we have as far as point six. What portion of Scripture is involved? What did he talk about? Jesus' return, the second coming. Point seven, what was the most important question that Randall asked? Have you obeyed the gospel? I've mentioned before, and this certainly didn't originate with me, but you can, figuratively speaking, put a rock in somebody's shoe. Tell them something, and that starts to nag at them. For example, a person says, you know, you have a bump in your head. Now, you never thought about having a bump in your head. But after you say that, hey, you've got some gray in your hair. Or it looks like, you know, you're limping today. Now, you didn't think about any of those things before you came in. But now he says, you've got some gray, or you've got some lumps, or you've got some bumps, or you've got a limp, whatever it might be. What are you thinking about? Is my hair really gray? You know, I knew I had a couple gray hairs, but wow, is that whole patch there? Do I really have a bump there? Man, yeah, I guess I do, you know? And that's the rock in the shoe. With spiritual questions, you can ask questions, and it may seem like the person is not paying attention. The person is completely uninterested. The person will never consider that. But do you know what's going on in the guy's mind or the woman's mind? No. And you've planted, remember, what did Jesus describe the word as? It is the seed. Can you plant that seed in the mind of people? Yes. We sometimes talk about the seed of doubt. And sometimes it can be the seed of the gospel. Okay, point eight. Notice three critical components of the dialogue. First of all, Randall's question. How were you saved? He sincerely wanted Mr. Mike to tell the story. We've talked about this before, and if you ever study the Bible with someone, this is something that you always want to do. Ask the question, hopefully earlier rather than later, how were you saved? And as the person gives all the details, what do you want to do? You want to write it down. And then after you write it down, you want to go back and say, okay, on January 6th, 1942, you were at the revival service, and the preacher issued an altar call, you went forward, confessed Jesus, the Holy Spirit came into your heart, and you knew you were saved. Is that right? Yes. Anything else? No, that was it. After a person gives me that information, I go back and I specifically ask about baptism. Were you ever baptized? Oh, yeah, when I was 2, as a baby. All right. Who did that? Why did they do that? I want all those details. Because, and this happens, too, with visitors. Over the years, you may have someone who was reared in a denomination, and they were maybe baptized at the age of 13 or 14. Maybe they were immersed. And the reason for their immersion was to join the church or something other than the forgiveness of sins. But they've come, and they've heard from the Wednesday night invitations. They've heard from the sermons, information about baptism again and again and again. And what happens to the mind after they've heard that, maybe for years? They say, well, I was baptized for the right reasons, and it's too late. But if you can get them still hopefully early enough where they can look back to what happened in those earlier years, ask the question, what did you do? Why did you do it? When did you do it? Those kinds of things. It's helpful to you, and it's also very, very helpful to them. Anything that you want to add or ask? Okay, that is very, very important. Point B. Secondly, Randall really listened. Listening is a skill that's learned, and it's vital in building human relationships. Maybe I'm completely wet here. I think that generally speaking, women probably listen a lot better than men. So maybe I'm just dead wrong about that, but women seem to be naturally attuned to listeners. If you go into a restaurant and you watch the men and the women who are having a conversation, generally what I see is the woman is very, very focused. I mean, you've got the eyes kind of glued on him, and she's looking for, you know, this, that, and the other thing. The guy, you know, maybe he's got one eye on her and, you know, one eye off somewhere else, you know, looking at a car in a parking lot or, you know, checking his phone or whatever it might be. So I can say women, they may not always be great listeners, but perhaps they, because of how they're wired, that just maybe is a little more intuitive to them and maybe a little easier for them. But some guys are great listeners as well. But especially as you're dealing with people when it comes to the spiritual realm, try to be a good listener. Carol, do you have a thought?
Well, I was just going to say, I used to have a manager that said they preferred salespeople because the guys could go out there and get themselves into trouble, you know, talking, and never know it, and the women would get themselves into trouble and out and get everything fixed before the guys even knew they had a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, women, I can say, for the most part, when it comes to communication, they just seem to be, generally speaking, several steps ahead of males. Whether that's knowing what to say, when to say it, how to listen, and so forth. So guys just need to, you know, sometimes get some help there and sometimes just try to do a better job. Nobody else wants to contribute to that one? Okay. Let's look at our verse. Can you think of a verse that teaches the importance of listening? How about James 1, verse 19? Let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak. Swift to hear, good listener. Point 9. What final question did Randall ask to invoke the opportunity to have a Bible study?
When did you get baptized?
Okay. And I think maybe I would add there too, don't you need to know the gospel to obey it? Don't you need to know what the gospel is in order to obey it? So he's stimulating some interest there as far as what's necessary to become a Christian. How did the devil try to thwart Randall and Michael's Bible study? Yes. Gossip, slander, those kinds of things. We'll be a little more specific about that a little bit later. But people today do that same thing, don't they? Ah, Sunday, you're not going to come down to wherever with us. You're going to go with him to services and so forth. You're not going to have any fun. So ridicule has often been used. Sometimes it's slander, as we see in this particular case. Anybody come up with a couple Bible verses about Satan and a strategy? 2 Corinthians 11, verse 14, if you want a reference. That talks about Satan. He's like an angel of light. And then you have as well Ephesians chapter 6, verse 16, as far as another reference. Satan likes to throw those fiery darts. Next page, 16, point 11, the seed of doubt is compelling. According to the text in the story, what does doubt cause?
All kinds of things.
It does. One of the things, the opposite of decision is
indecision.
And if a person is doubting something, again, they're waffling, they're not quite sure, indecision is going to be a major issue. Anything that you want to add or ask over that chapter? All right, let's look across the page. Chapter 4, the yellow scrap of paper. 1 Peter 3:21, we probably should read that verse And you can back up to verse 20 as well, and then Colossians chapter 2, verses 11 through 13. As we've said, these are verses which, if you want to read them and try to memorize them, that's really good. At least we should know about where they are in the Bible, and they are certainly critical as we think about the study that we have at hand. 1 Peter chapter 3, 20 and 21. Who wants to be a reader? 1 Peter 3, 20 and 21, Jeff. And then we'll also look at Colossians 2, 11 through 13. Who wants to take responsibility there? All right, Lois, thank you. Let's go back to 1 Peter 3, 20 and 21. Jeff?
Gotta get the phone fired up.
Okay.
He points out there's a Bible in front of you, so.
Okay. Lois, you in Colossians 2? Headed there. Okay. 11 through 13. 11 through 13, okay, two key points there. You were dead, but now you are alive. You were buried by baptism, and now you are raised. Well, it sounds like, what happens after baptism? All right, we've got new life. We've been raised up. We've been united with Christ. We have the forgiveness of our sins. It almost sounds like baptism does what? Baptism saves us. Well, let's see, Jeff, what we have in 1 Peter 3, 20 and 21.
For in us and they have escaped the pollutions of the world through the knowledge of the Lord.
I don't think that's...
Oh, that first. Second Peter.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We're awake, so if you were checking, we're going to back up one book.
I'm just looking on the other side of the page here.
Okay.
All right. Who formerly were disobedient, were once the divine long-suffering, waited in the days of Noah while the ark was being prepared, in which a few, that is eight souls, were saved through the water. There is now also an antitype, which now saves us, baptism, not the removal of the filth of the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience towards God through the resurrection of Jesus Christ.
Thank you. Peter says baptism is not a bath. It's not for the filth of the flesh. But it does say baptism saves us. Saves us in what sense? Well, we were dead. After baptism, we're alive. Before baptism, we were in our sins. After baptism, we are freed from our sins. Water separated the people. The saved from the lost in Noah's day and time, it separates the saved from the lost today. Now he asks, and I didn't come up with an answer for this. I really don't know what he was looking for. He says, research in the New Testament on the topic of baptism. How many verses are there on the new birth? That, John 3 may have been what he had in mind. I'm not exactly sure. So I kind of looked at that and thought, I'm not... I guess you never know what's in the mind of an author in this particular case. We're all confused. So, but there are some. The book of Acts and John 3 would be the places where we'd probably want to emphasize. All right, point four. Consider the fear you feel when thinking about handing someone a scribbled note on a piece of paper containing a scripture. What verse helps us manage this fear? Well, we used it Sunday. Remember Hebrews chapter 13, verse 6? The Lord is my helper. You know, have good courage, not fear what men will do to me. Now, there's a verse in that Sermon on Courage Sunday that it didn't use. And this comes from the book of Mark. Mark 15, verse 43. I want us to go over there and take a look at that. That would have been a good verse to have used on Sunday, but it's also a great verse to use tonight. This is about Joseph of Arimathea. Anybody remember something about Joseph? What was he part of? Joseph of Arimathea. No. That was Simon of Cyrene. Joseph of Arimathea.
Was he the one that had the tomb?
Mm-hmm. Yes, there we go. He's part of the Sanhedrin. Now remember from our Wednesday night classes on the life of Christ, what's the Sanhedrin doing?
Trying to kill Christ.
All right, trying to kill Christ. You're a blasphemer. We've given, you know, we've got the evidence against you. We've given our vote against you. And then they want to drag him off to the Romans and have him crucified. Let's see what we have in Mark 15, verse 43. Who's got it? Ready to read. All right, Betty?
Joseph of Arimathea, an honorable
There it is. He came, he went in boldly. Isn't that interesting? Can you imagine a member of the Sanhedrin going and asking for the Lord's body? Now, had he gone in there to ask for the body so it could be strung up somewhere and mocked, the other guys probably wouldn't have been upset about that. But that body was the one that called for the Lord's death. And now a member of that body is going, asking for the body in a courageous way so that body can be cared for in the way that we know. That took some guts. That took some courage. So when we think about being bold, when we think about being courageous, that is a great example for us. So he asks, what verses might we use? Hebrews 13:6, Mark 15:43. Anybody have any other verses that they wanted to attach here?
Joshua 1:9.
All right. There, you can go back to verse 6 where Joshua was told in that context, don't turn to the right, don't turn to the left, but be bold, be courageous, I'm going to be with you, don't fear. So yes, he needed that and God gave him those instructions. Anybody else? Okay. Set a goal, he says, to introduce yourself to one stranger this week. Now, for some people, that's terrifying. Sometimes they may struggle to have a conversation with people they feel somewhat close to. But if that's something that you struggle with, that's one goal that you can have. He says, as far as some motivational information, brethren and sister, get to work. The work of the disciple is not for the lazy! Exclamation mark. You've got a lot to do in the next 7 days. It's exciting, exhilarating, and a precious opportunity from God. Don't squander your talents or your time. Hey, if this is not for you, find another class. Well, I don't think that's probably how we want to state things here. We don't have any other classes for adults tonight, but that's not really the direction we're heading. But if this is for you, do not procrastinate. The church of our Lord Jesus Christ needs courageous sisters and brothers who are ready to begin the second restoration movement, pointing people back to the Bible. Then he says, yes, you are going to be part of a second restoration movement. You must be part of it because I do not know the people you know. Randall does not know the people you know. You are the only one that can plant the seed into the hearts of those in your sphere of influence. Without you, they are lost. He mentions, too, make lists of 10. If you've not done that yet, let me encourage you to do that. At least pray for those people. And remember what we talked about earlier? You want to be approachable. Remember that word? And we also said with that approachability, what are you hoping to find? You're hoping to find an opening. Are there times in life where we feel like somebody that's close to us, we need to have an opening before we have a discussion?
Yeah.
Yeah. What would some of those times be? I'm going to give the wife needs to find a time to approach her husband. She needs an opening. What circumstance might necessitate that? Then we'll flip around and say the husband needs to approach the wife. Okay, I wasn't thinking anything quite that severe, but all right, maybe it's a health issue. I've got cancer. Well, the husband probably doesn't want to call the wife on the way home from the knock and say, hey, I got cancer, and you know, she drops what she's doing in the kitchen. So, you know, let's sit down. We'll make this somewhat approachable, assuming that she knew that he was at the doctor. So that's in the right realm, but let's see if we can do something else. The wife. Okay, I think that's a great illustration. Yeah, we actually had that in my household, so I can tell that tonight. All right. You know, you're backing out, you knock it off, you know, connect with the garage door frame and so forth. You know, you probably just don't want to call up hubby and say, oh, hey, by the way, you know, this is what I did, and I'll see you after a little bit. But, you know, you get home and try to kind of work things out. You know, maybe you bring home a brownie mix and, as you're whipping up the brownie, say, oh, by the way. But you try to make things more approachable. If you flip it around, what about the man? Well, what about when he wants to go out and buy the new boat? I mean, it may not be quite that big, or he wants a new weed eater, or thinking about replacing a lawnmower. You know, wife's tired, maybe watched the kids all day, had a hard day at work, or maybe she's sick, she's got the flu. And you hit her up while she's in bed. Hey, I want to buy a new lawnmower. Well, how do you think that's going to go over? Probably not too swell. Yeah, you're going to get a lot more. You're going to get chopped. So, you know, you're thinking in terms of approachability. So we, as we look at life, we think in terms of approachability. You're going to go to the boss for a raise. Well, after he's just chewed somebody out, you think that's the right time to go into the office and say, boy, I've been here a long time. I sure would like a longer vacation time. No, that's not the right time. And with kids, we use approachability. So this is something that's a very common part of life, and it's like some other things. We need to take what we know in the physical realm, transfer it over into the spiritual realm, because that's how life works. Thoughts on that? Okay. Let's see. We've got about 12 minutes left, and let's take a look at that information before the discussion. Make our list. Again, you can go back and review some of the passages that we've talked about. Maybe try to memorize some of those verses. Think about being perhaps a little more outgoing as far as strangers. And concentrate on some of the simple texts that we've talked about. Stay excited about the faith. Discussion. How did Mike become a Baptist? Anybody remember? Okay. Yeah, and then we've got some information there about the revival too, don't we?
Yes.
He's going 8 years old and gets invited and so forth. Yeah, got the hand raised and come forward on the knees, prayed sinner's prayer, Jesus into the heart. And then he was baptized about when?
8 years old.
I thought it was 13.
Yeah. Oh,
he accepts Jesus into the heart at age 8. And then?
Yeah, 13.
5? Yeah, yes. 5 years later. Now, remember what we talked about before? As you're talking about things, he says, oh, accept Jesus in my heart and so forth. If you don't ask about baptism, and especially if he's come to some services, he'll say, well, sure, yeah, I accepted Jesus into my heart, but I wasn't saved until I was baptized because of what he's heard as far as the teaching. So write that stuff down. That will, as I said, help you. It will help the person. It's very, very important. And then I think he says in the book, it was for an outward show. We had, and I think I've used this illustration before, but it's appropriate here. Cheryl Huffman, she was baptized. Palmer's had talked with her a good bit. Teresa had talked with her a good bit. And there'd been a lot of teaching. And there were still a couple of lingering questions. So I was asked to chat with her for a little bit and did. She was kind of on the fence as far as whether or not she had been baptized for the forgiveness of sins. She was kind of leaning that way, but maybe a little uncertainty. So about where Lois is. We were sitting back there and we had some others up about where I am. And we actually called and got that religious group on the line. And put it on speakerphone. And asked that fellow who was the representative for that group, at least at the time, if a person was saved before or after baptism. And once he said, well, no, baptism is not in any way associated with salvation, her eyes got as big as dinner plates. It's kind of like, oh, wow, now I know, because I just heard the guy say that, basically my baptism was not for the forgiveness of sins. So sometimes that's a step that you can take as well. And that helps people get it in their minds, this is what you did, it was not for the right reasons. And again, they need that, and that's very, very helpful to them. All right, point two, what are differences between the once saved, always saved view versus faithful unto death, Revelation 2:10? Once saved, always saved means what? You can't lose it. You can't forfeit salvation. You're saved, and there's nothing that you can do. There's nothing that God can do to undo that. And the opposite is true as well. If you are among the condemned, if God has selected you for condemnation, you can't undo that. You're going to be condemned, and you have absolutely no hope, regardless of how you feel or what you want. What made Mike think he was a good guy? Oh, I don't kill, and I don't steal, and I don't murder, and I don't, he just goes through the I don't list. Do we have that today? It's all over in the world. People think, well, I'm good. I may not go to services, and, there's this and there's that, but here's my I don't list, and because it's negative righteousness, at least that's my description for it, and people feel like they're pretty good folks. Well, everything that they say, we and God might agree with. Yes, you're not a killer. Yes, you're not a robber. Yes, you're not a plunderer. Yes, you're not an extortioner. All those things. But that's not what is going to be the basis for salvation and condemnation. Point four. What different course did Randall take after Mike canceled the Bible study appointment?
Gave him a scriptural piece
of paper. Yeah, here's your piece of paper. We talked about the rock and the shoe. Here's a little something that you can think about. I'm going to sow this seed in your mind. In some respects, when you think about BBS, what are we trying to do with our kids that come in? You see that? We're just trying to sow some seeds. We might see them once, maybe twice a year. We're trying to put a little bit of Bible in their mind, and hopefully at a later time when they think perhaps they're now married or thinking about marriage or they have some kids, let's think about God and spiritual things. Where are we going to go? well, maybe that seed will start to germinate at that point. So try to send something with that person, whether that's a Bible verse. We've got tracts out there. We have all kinds of little things. We've got business cards. Sow something in the minds of people. Point five, Larry, Mike's best friend, had started carrying a Bible. Do you know why? Okay, I put no there because of page 36. Okay, all right, then. Okay, that's probably the better answer then. So, all right, thank you for that additional information. Yes is probably the answer we want there. What verse did Randall pass off to Michael? All right, that verse that we read earlier. Jeff read it, I believe. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 21. Baptism does now save you. If you're going to send someone away with something, let's take religion out of it for just a second. You're a salesperson. And you want to send somebody away with something so that they will remember you. What would you use? Potentially. Let's frame it in a little better way. You're at a trade show, Arby's. And you have 100 dealers inside this large building. And everybody's trying to sell you their RV. You're one of the reps. And it's your job to sell as many RVs as you can. And there's this guy who comes up, among others. And you're trying to sell him the RV, just like the other 99 dealers are. What might you say to him that sticks out in his mind where he says, I'm going to remember that? Now, he might not remember anything else about your sales pitch, but what do you tell him that sticks with him and he comes back possibly? Okay, there might be that. What else? What do you say? You are the sales guy. It is your job to make that guy buy an RV from you. What do you tell him? All right, that might be one. If you have any problems, here is my business card. I will personally take care of you. You think that's going to make an impression on somebody? And then what happens if you write down your personal email and your personal cell? That's one. What else? What about I'll beat anybody's price by 10%? You think some people are going to remember that?
Sure.
Yeah, I think some people will. Now, that remains to be seen, but again, if that's his offer, what else? I'll double the warranty on this unit for you. There are statements like that that you can send people away with, and they will hold on to that. That is the seed. And as you're dealing with people spiritually, you can ask those kinds of questions which will leave that seed. It'll continue to stick in the mind. Now, if we turn that around and think about it spiritually, we have an example, 1 Peter 3:21. Baptism now saves you. That's pretty short. That's pretty simple. That's pretty powerful. And you leave that with somebody. Baptism now saves you, and here's where you can find it in the Bible. You can look it up yourself. Study the verse out on your own. What other statements could you leave with a person? Repent or perish, Luke 13:3. What would another one be? All right, that would be another one. Anything else? Flaming fire on those who obey not the gospel of Christ. Think somebody might have a couple nightmares about that one? Some might. So, as I said, those are verses which you can be familiar with and maybe try to, slip in there and let that seed get planted and hopefully grow with time. Gary?
Because no matter how lost you think you are, you can always be saved.
Yeah.
Because some people think they're too bad to be able to be saved.
All right, that would be another one. Every single person can be saved. There is no one who has fouled up so much that salvation is impossible. Because you'll have some people who think, well, you know, if you knew what I did, then there would be no hope for me. But yes. So, those are great statements. All right, Larry, we dealt with point six. Point seven is, what did this verse do for Mike? Or to Mike?
Oh, you needed a religious expert to explain it.
Yeah, there was shock, there was curiosity. I need to get some help here. And you'll find that if you will give people those verses, generally they will go to somebody else and try to figure out what that verse means. Now, sometimes it might be, as Stan mentioned earlier, or I think as Betty alluded to, or maybe Ray, they will find the person who is religious in their work environment. I had that happen in the military. People would come and say, well, you're religious, you're the local expert, quote unquote, so let's start with you and see what happens. And sometimes they'll go there and they will not go beyond that. But in today's realm, things are a lot different with the internet now. You don't have to find somebody in the workplace. You can fire up Google. Now, again, you know, that I guess maybe you're back to God's providence there, because the first thing that pops up on Google, in fact, I read today, this could be bad, this could be good. I'm thinking it's probably more bad than good. But every once in a while, I'll say every 2 years, maybe it's every 6 months, that might be a closer average. But anyway, the way things are evaluated on the net, as far as websites, where they rank as far as search traffic, you're looking for a particular topic, and it might be that these six sites come up first now, but in 6 months or 2 years later, those six sites are buried, and now you have six more sites. The algorithms that they use to keep that stuff, the criteria is always changing. And one of the things that came out today as far as people who try to optimize web pages so their stuff can be found at the top of search engines, right now one of the things that Google is working on might be summed up as web pages that offer answers in a hurry. Apparently Google has come to the conclusion that people, when they go to the internet and they ask a question, for example, what's the temperature of Pluto? Bang, they want a page which, that's not buried 52 pages deep in some complicated technical college report. They want, okay, this is the temperature right off. Well, that makes sense. Now, that can be helpful in a lot of ways. But can you see the danger in that when it comes to spirituality? What must I do to be saved? Sinner's prayer. Bang, that's a quick answer. So I think spiritually that may not be too helpful for us in the short term, unless some people have really done a good job as far as trying to put some things succinctly. Now, you actually see here, we'll not get it to tonight, we've got to actually shut down class here, but you'll find that Mike asks a question, there's some derision associated with the question, and Randall says, hey, we need to talk about that a little bit. This is a little more involved. This isn't a 30-second answer. It would be nice if when we come to religion, we could give people a 10 or 20 or 30-second answer. That is not always possible. Jesus wasn't able to do that. If we're giving people the truth, we can't always do that either, because that's just not possible. But that sometimes is what people want. So, as far as that verse, what it did to Mike, the shock, the curiosity, and so forth, that did get him pointed in the right direction, and that's sometimes what we need to do as well. Final thoughts that you have before we shut it down tonight? Okay, let's pick up, Lord willing, with page 19 and following next week. Thank you.